It's very typical that walking into a project like this, you don't even know what you don't know yet. And what we didn't know is how much material was going to be given to us from the former members that was produced in the cult. Towards the end of the edit, we received another hard drive that was titled The Holy Grail, and that contained recordings of secret meetings inside the cult where we discussed their business strategy, and we didn't have a ton of time, and we were a very small team to review over 1,000 hours of this footage. We quickly realized we were dealing with a lot of footage, and we kept finding more and more.
What's up, and welcome back to the Post-Production Club. We are your hosts. I'm Luke.
I'm Gavin. And today we have something a little bit different in that we're hearing from people that work on unscripted content. Up until this point, we've only really talked to people that have worked in the narrative space. And so really excited for you guys to get to hear from the queens of unscripted content. We have showrunner Cecilia Peck and ace editor Inbal B. Lesner, the duo behind Netflix's true crime documentary Escaping Twin Flames and Seduced Inside the NXIVM Cult. Both are true crime documentaries, and they talk about what it's like to collaborate together for over 15 years, the editing process for unscripted content versus scripted or narrative, and the challenges that come along with the heavy subject matter of their films. Let's dive in. Well, welcome Cecilia and Inbal.
Thank you.
Where does this podcast find you today?
We're both in LA.
Did you guys grow up there?
I grew up mostly here, but bounced around a lot too.
I grew up, as some people can tell from my name, in Israel, and moved here for film school in 1998. First to New York and then to LA.
It's always interesting to me to hear people that are living in LA, just like where they've come from, because it's most often a place where people come from somewhere else, right?
Yeah, it's rare to meet real Angelenos here.
You have worked on Netflix's Escaping Twin Flames, Seduced, Brave Miss World, The Bachelorette even back in the day, and then Stormy, the timely new documentary about Stormy Daniels that's on Peacock. Kind of wanted to hear, starting high level, what's the biggest thing that you've learned from having worked on non-scripted content?
Oh, wow. Well, as an editor mostly, and sometimes creator producer working on unscripted, you, in the editor chair, have a lot more influence and over the storytelling and the shaping of the story. You'll find that editors who work mainly in documentary features and series just love to wear all these hats and to be really, you know, working usually with smaller teams and writing the story as we go along, writing it in the editing room and influencing what the director or producers might capture on location after we're hired as editors. So it's just an opportunity to really tell real, true stories and influence how people might reshape their thinking on a certain person or subject matter or theme. So I find it sort of activating every brain cell in my head.
Cecilia, I'm curious for you, having directed and showrun, written a lot of this content and working through it all, what learnings do you have as you walk away from working on stuff like this?
I have a belief that you have to call out things that you feel aren't right in the world, and that we get to do this through film, and that film can be a combination of activism and story.
For Twin Flames specifically, do you feel like the interviewees told a clear story, or did you have to work hard to kind of create the episode arcs?
Well, when you're dealing with people who have emerged from a controlling group or a cult or the influence of coercive control, depending how deprogrammed they are, they're going to be kind of going back and forth between describing what was happening at the time and having to put themselves back in that mindset, and then looking at it with some distance. So I think our job of making sure they feel safe and supported while they're recalling traumatic events, combined with, you know, being investigators and wanting to get to the most, critical and sometimes most difficult parts of the story to tell, is you know, that's our challenge. So I think mainly we want to make sure that they don't feel pressured or forced to reveal something they're not ready to, or that they're kind of being exploited like they were in the cult. So those are some of the challenges that we face. But in this case, I think the former members and survivors of Twin Flames Universe were just incredibly courageous about being willing to share their stories, and they're doing it because they want to show people what the red flags of groups like this are, and maybe help somebody else to leave a group like that or prevent someone else from going into one.
And in terms of building the story arcs, you know, we, after 2 years of pre-interviews and gathering information and assets, evidence from the former members, we try to throw everything on a storyboard and start writing a scene by scene outline. You know, the story arcs are more experiential and not necessarily chronological, meaning we follow how they found a group, how they got recruited, and sophisticated way, sort of micro-targeted and recruited and then indoctrinated, forced to buy more and more classes and go deeper and deeper, work for free for the group. And so it goes kind of in intensity of their experience. So one person may have joined in 2017 and one other person may have joined in 2020, but we really have to build the arc around their shared experience and not so much chronological. So that can sometimes be a challenge, because you also have those kind of moments in time throughout the series where actual big things happen in the group, the introduction of a new class or the introduction of a new concept or somebody, or those group meetings that they had. We show three meetings. While this is mostly an online cult that exists all through the screen, they did meet in person three times, and we show that in the three episodes. So, you know, you kind of have to weave in and out of this chronological milestone, but really keep it about their shared experience.
Inbal, a lot of times you'll play a producer role as well as in the editorial. So I'm curious, as you two collaborate on things, how soon do you get involved? How do you decide when to bring her on for something, you know, instead of her just playing like more of like an editor role?
Well, as co-showrunners, we come up with the concepts for the show. These have been based on people we've worked with before. This is our third project that we've made with trauma survivors. So I think there's a certain level of trust in that community, and especially from cult survivors now. So they have sought us out. So with Escaping Twin Flames, we, from the beginning, started to meet survivors from that group. We developed the concept. We wrote a very extensive outline. We put together pitch materials and, you know, just worked on the whole project from start to finish together.
But even with other projects that I had hired as an editor, I love coming as early as possible and be able to get involved in the development and the thinking of what we're going to shoot, how just thinking on paper or on the storyboard, how one scene is going to end on a question and lead to the next scene. You know, we're at least coming up with some template for the story, and those things are ever changing and will end up on every project, inevitably change many times. But at least we have something, you know, we can all feel good about for the vision of the film before we start shooting anything. And a lot of the projects have a massive amount that I'm involved in, have a massive amount of archival footage. And so it's really helpful for an unscripted editor to review the archival before any new production footage is captured. And in some of the films, like Victim Suspect and like Twin Flames, we used pieces from the archival on location. And we showed, in Twin Flames, we showed pieces of the survivors being indoctrinated, being at the time in the cult, experiencing a group sort of group therapy class session, and showed it to them today. And they are able to interact with who they were while they were in the group versus how they feel about it today. And that tension is what sort of drives the piece forward. So we didn't have a ton of time, and we were a very small team to review over 1,000 hours of this footage. But I think it's really beneficial for any documentary project to bring the editors early on.
Yeah, speak more to that. Why is that important?
You know, a director or producer can think their film is about one thing, but it's really, there's another theme that's emerging that's maybe stronger or could potentially serve as a new spine for the piece. So all those conversations are really important to have early on. Again, not to say that it always happens. On Stormy that you mentioned, I joined very late in the process. There was already a first cut, but you know, that has its own benefits too.
Yeah, definitely. Being able to come into it with fresh eyes for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious how you both met. When did you first start working together?
So we met in 2003. We met through mutual friends and connections. And I had seen a film Inbal did, which was an archival film, but it felt like a verite film. And I just thought she was so talented and I wanted to work with her. And she'd seen one of my films. So we met. And then when I was approached to make a film called Brave Miss World, I brought it to her and, you know, asked if she was interested. And that was our kind of first journey together. It was a 5-6 year film. So we kind of got to know each other and what each other's strengths and complementary, you know, talents were. And we've made 3 projects together now. We've also started and developed others that haven't, you know, been completed yet, but we have been working together for, how long is it, Inbal?
15 years.
Wow. That's amazing. Inbal, I'm curious, what stands out about Cecilia? You guys have collaborated on a ton of things. I want to hear about, like, why? Why have you guys stuck together?
Well, Cecilia mentioned that I watched her film, Shut Up and Sing, which actually co-directed with Barbara Couple, and I thought it was so perfectly told and beautiful story about the Dixie Chicks, but really about sisterhood and the courage to speak up and finding your voice and, you know, music and politics. It's about like life. So I love that type of storytelling. I knew Cecilia would push me to do my best work. Cecilia has endless compassion towards trauma survivors, but people in general, and her ability to make these really deep connections and have her interviews and you know, film can come from a deep place of empathy and curiosity, I think is her sort of superpower. And then definitely her ability to not compromise. I mean, she will too, like, doesn't matter if picture is locked and she thinks something needs to be better, it will get done. So it's like a little bit of the ability to like never sort of stop until you like force her out of the edit room because like we run out of time and money and the show is going on the air. So, you know, it's I like that sort of perfectionism and striving to do the best, especially when it's driven by our commitment to our survivors and the really striving to tell the best story for them while they're still maintaining agency over their stories. So it's incredible to be able to, you know, create the show and run this team and still hold space for the survivors to feel heard and involved and part of the process. They really are our partners.
I mean, Inbal's just so ridiculously talented, you know, not just as an editor, but also as an executive producer and showrunner and storyteller. I mean, she manages the entire production, the story team, the editing team, the graphics, the music, the archival. We work together, but she's the one with the overview. She's just good at every single job. And I'm so lucky to work with her. And for instance, our dynamic or our relationship in production, the way it works is if I'm on set interviewing a contributor, you know, I have a sense of the themes and the questions that are going to be relevant to the story. But in Baal is even more focused about what parts of an interview are going to help to clarify, you know, the questions and the themes that we're addressing. So, you know, we review the questions together. And then when Inbal can't be on the set, she's always monitoring remotely so that if I'm, you know, in the middle of an interview and let's say it takes a direction or something emerges that we didn't maybe expect or know, we're communicating at every break and sometimes even, you know, after every question to say, do we need to delve further into this or do we have enough? Can we let this one go? So that's how closely we work together. And Baal also thinks in terms of scenes, you know, of editing strong scenes. And with complex projects like this that involve, you know, a history of an organization and archival, as well as the personal stories of contributors, I think some editors will rely on more of a kind of montage of interview and archival and using graphics and music to help tell a story. But Inbal is always looking foremost to cut a strong scene, you know, that's emotional and informative and that's going to advance the story. So just wanted to talk a little bit about our process together and what I think makes her so insanely talented.
Is there something specific that you feel stands out apart from maybe other co-creators and co-showrunners and duos?
I'm pretty proud of the way we put together and manage our teams, both on set and especially in post, because those are the people who will go sort of all the way to the finish line. And it's really in the trenches. And I know we're very proud of our relationship with the people in front of the camera, but I think it's important to say we're very mindful of how we manage the team behind the camera. First of all, their well-being and emotional well-being and mental health is also really important. So the same mental health services, and we might touch on it, but that are offered for people on screen in front of the camera are also offered to the team. And I think that's important to keep in mind that this is not easy work. We're exposed to sometimes triggering and difficult materials. I gave this example before, but on Seduced, we had an associate producer that watched a lot of the talks that Keith Raniere was giving, that the Nexium cult leader, and she felt like it started making sense to her, like she was getting brainwashed. So, you know, we really need to be mindful of how this material is impacting us and our team. And so I wanted to make sure we have, like, every week at the same time, weekly meetings with everybody. So it would be from the sort of associate producers, interns, to the editors and executive producers. We all meet. We all try to do a little icebreaker question to kind of get to know each other and be in a more friendly, personal basis. You know, I think when people like each other and see each other as friends, they collaborate better. And that shows in the series. So we really have strong team, particularly the editors. They need to work as a team. They together cut a 3-hour basically film. It's not standalone episodes. So they all have to be good team players and throw scenes back and forth, not be too precious about their particular cuts because they're going to go through different hands and different iterations. So we all sort of know that what our goal is, and we keep that in mind. Cecilia makes sure she reminds us all, like, what at stake here. And, you know, we kind of come together and use every team member to their best sort of strengths. You know, everybody brings their A game to try to make this show and wear as many hats as needed.
I wanted to add something about what kind of defines our work, because you know, we work on very extreme subjects and we work with people who have been victims of just incredible abuse and trauma and who have been, you know, betrayed, in some cases sexually abused, who have been subjugated. So obviously the series, the work we make is very intense and very dramatic. And I think sometimes people, you know, perceive it, especially with this one, with Escaping Twin Flames, as just being so crazy that that's kind of their first impression. But I think sometimes the work of, you know, crafting it, of making sure that each contributor has a narrative through line from start to finish, that our shows end with hope, with women using their voices, that sometimes can get overlooked. I would say the craft of what makes it feel so dramatic and compelling and pacey is maybe subtle enough that it's not the first thing people notice, but we, you know, we do put an enormous amount of work into crafting shows that have powerful narrative through lines.
How did you kind of end up in doing this type of content?
I was acting before I started making documentaries, but always filming things and always had a video camera and getting friends to cut things together. And then I got an opportunity to work on a film of Barbara Copples, who was shooting in France and needed a fixer, and I speak French. So I got to work with Barbara, which was, I had seen Harlan County. It's probably the film that above all made me want to do that or dream of doing it. The fact that, you know, she could embed into the lives of these Kentucky coal miners and make you feel like you were part of their lives, and just the voices of the women in that film. I think it's one of the, you know, greats ever made. And so after working with Barbara on that film in France, I got the opportunity to go and work with her in New York at her company, Cabin Creek, and slowly learn to associate produce. And then, you know, she gives everybody in her office the opportunity to work on research and development and go into the field and work on production and work on post. So I did learn filmmaking from her, and she was my mentor. And, you know, she's a Verite filmmaker. So I come from that background, and, you know, now working in documentary series, you know, I came from making films with Barbara where you expect it to take, you know, 5 years, if that's how long it takes for the story to unfold. So, you know, working with Inbal and working in series, it's a very different discipline, but I think I try to still bring my Verite background to our work and make sure that there are scenes that allow you to follow a story that's unfolding, as well as crafting a story with the use of interview and archival.
What's like the biggest difference between trying to edit like a normal film and a documentary?
I think they're all connected, though. I think, you know, writing, directing, documentary filmmaking, acting, it's all about getting to the essence of a story and telling the truth.
I would say the challenge of not having a script, I mean, even if it's a real story that already happened, and I guess all three projects that I did in Sicilia were about stories that for the most part already happened, but there's always a current component, that sort of present day component, an unfolding story. You try to, not just in the design of the story of like, why does it matter now? Why are we following it right now? There's always like, how did what happened to them affect them today? How are they dealing with, for example, in Twin Flames, coming to terms with what they did and what was done to them while they were in the cult, how they can mend their relationships that were broken and damaged while they were in the cult, and how are they finding their voice and overcoming and keep healing from that experience today? So that you can't write and you can't plan for. You can create the sort of best conditions for this to unfold and happen. And you can say, okay, we're going to create a safe experience and follow this person throughout their normal day. And hopefully this or this come, like you have to imagine that amazing things are going to happen and always have like a B plan, C plan, D plan, and so on, because things, you know, truth is stranger than fiction, and things can really happen that are unexpected. And, you know, good filmmakers like Cecilia, that comes from Verite, can react to it very quickly and respond to not what the preconceived notion that they had in their head, but what is really unfolding in front of the camera. So even if she had a list of questions, but somebody's all of a sudden have a new memory of something we didn't even know before the interview, or, you know, a particular emotional reaction to something we didn't, may have not expected, you know, she will feel that energy and respond to it in real time. So you have to be a lot more, I think, attuned and open in documentary, because you're not just trying to make the best version of what's on the page. You really have to let whatever is unfolding in real time emerge and present itself and then capture it and as best as you can.
You guys talked about having to go through so much content with Twin Flames. Can you guys talk about your process for putting that together a little bit more? Did you always want to just rely heavily on source content? I know there's, you know, also the option of reenacting things through B-roll and kind of recreating like those scenes. Was ever thought of which approach you guys were going to take, a little bit of both? And how did you decide whatever, which way you went?
It's very typical that walking into a project like this, you don't even know what you don't know yet. And what we didn't know is how much material was going to be given to us from the former members that was produced in the cult, and how much is available publicly on YouTube. We kept finding more and more. And then we kept getting more and more recordings of classes, both the live group classes, the Twin Flames Ascension School classes, and some other sort of pre-recorded classes. And then actually towards the end of the edit, we received another hard drive that was titled The Holy Grail. And that contained recordings of inner circle meetings, business meetings, like secret meetings inside the cult where we discussed their business strategy and particular issues and sort of more management. So we quickly realized we were dealing with a lot of footage, and a lot of it looks the same. It's just like this one group Zoom with Jeff and Shelia at the center of the screen and a gallery of faces on the bottom. And we understood that we need to find our contributors, our main former members featured in those classes, and then track their stories in the cult, see if they talk about their twin flame journey, how they were trying to find love, secure, you know, get love, pursue who they either thought or were told was their twin flame, how they were told to change their sexual identity or gender expression, all those things we needed to track in those videos. And so we actually transcribed every piece of video with AI and built this huge archive. We couldn't even afford to the time and resources to bring everything into the Avid. So we had this vast library sitting on G Drive, on Google Drive, plus all the transcripts that we did bring into the Avid. And so we could look for certain terms. So we had, you know, our archival producer scanning through to find the people we wanted to highlight. And then we had another type of search for themes and keywords and certain terms that we're repeating. For example, when Jeff decides that he's the second coming of Christ, like we did search for Christ and God and Jesus and, you know, and to find all these pieces that would help us tell the story with the archival. And so those pieces are used to illustrate and bring to life the survivor stories and make you feel like you're going through it in real time with them. So you really, when they're talking to you about joining, you see Keely in or Marley in her very first class. You see that. And when they're talking about going to New York and meeting everybody, you see that from those insider videos in real time. And so it really helps them remember their experience with some of these clips shown to them online. And it helps the audience really experience, not just in hindsight, but in the moment, as they're going through it. And there's just nothing better than great sort of insider footage.
It was like so intense. I kind of dad watched it like from the kitchen while my wife would watch it, and I would be cooking dinner and kind of watch it. That's one of the coolest things I think about this show. Like a lot of documentaries, it is like recreations or like animations or like just kind of really old footage or maybe footage of a different thing. But with this, it's like the time they'll be like, yeah, and then he said this to me, and then it cuts to him saying it to them. And that's like so cool and unique. What was it like to receive that drive? How did you feel when it just like showed up?
Even when we had 1,000 hours, we were still constantly actively searching for more. We knew there was more content, more secret groups within the group. And so we keep pursuing every lead to try to get as much insider material, because that's the most damning. There's a lot of pieces of the story for which we didn't have any imagery.
I mean, this was a cult, obviously, that helps or promises to, you know, find people's twin flame or get them into what they call harmonious union with their ultimate lover. So we didn't have scenes of the way they push people to basically, you know, stalk old lovers, you know, pushing people back into relationships that were completely inappropriate and should have been over. But, you know, and then ultimately pairing people within the group together. But yes, so there's no footage for a lot of those moments between the supposed twin flames. And there isn't any recreation, you know, in our series. I think, you know, we felt that because cult indoctrination are basically getting people to accept a different ideology or erode their critical thinking is something that works on the subconscious. It didn't really make sense to try to do literal recreations. You know, we're trying to look at or develop a visual language for how people's thinking was changed and eroded. So that's why we chose to use animation, and we worked with this incredibly talented firm, Yuk Fu Animation, based in Melbourne. And I think with them, we're able to find ways of just expressing how a cult leader can get into the mind of cult members, and especially with these kind of rituals and seances that they put on, which are designed to kind of hypnotize you and make you more vulnerable to a new ideology. Our animation, I think, was very evocative and successful in suggesting how that might have felt or how it might have looked or what it might have been like for the members without trying to say literally this is how it was. But, you know, a lot of these cults claim to have spiritual connection to God or an ability to channel godlike information. So I think that's what our animation helped us to do, was visualize how they manipulated people with this kind of, you know, spiritual teachings that people were subjected to over and over, you know, daily in many cases, these, you know, teachings and classes combined with their techniques of indoctrination, of kind of alternately praising members and then punishing them or ostracizing them. Those are some of the tools for how cult leaders get intelligent professional people to accept a new ideology. And those are some of the things that we were able to work on through animated scenes. And I think being able to convey the emotions of what people were feeling and how, you know, how they were so affected by the cult's teachings, you know, worked really well in our animation.
Had you guys directed or worked with a lot of animators and animated scenes in the past before, or how was that experience? How are you feeling about it?
Yes, we had worked with animation in our previous series, Seduced, Inside the Nexium Cult. And I think in that series, where a lot of the material was incredibly graphic, the abuses that some of the members experience, like being branded, physically branded and sexually abused, we felt that it was a much more sensitive way of presenting those sequences and those events than trying to recreate them.
What do you feel like are some good best practices that you guys employ when working with animation?
Communication is key. It's so, you know, once you get into the realm of, you know, art and drawing and animation, first of all, money goes just flying. You don't have a ton of time. You have to be very laser focused and efficient. Usually we have limited budgets, and that dictates how many seconds and sometimes frames of animation we can afford to use for every sequence. So we have to be very, very intentional and thoughtful about where we use it, and how much. And so, you know, Cecilia and I would find visual, references, like if somebody stands up, it's not just enough to say, well, she's standing. We want to like use 10 different adjectives or visual references to in what pose they're standing, or, you know, what does that look like? Sometimes we take photo of ourselves just in different positions just to like explain the pose or the, how we want things to feel or look. It does take a lot of very good communication skills with the animation team. Sometimes we involve the former members, the contributors in that process, help understand from their memories. Even though it's suggestive, often suggestive and abstract, it's still representative of their stories and memories. And so we don't want it to be, you know, different and than what they remember. So we want it to be true to their memory and truth, but also universal enough where somebody watching it can still feel that could be me in that silhouette or drawing, and I can understand and feel what they're going through. We pay a lot of attention to color schemes, both I think in Seduced and Twin Flames. We have sort of evolving colors to the animations from beginning to end. So the color palette really, and the form really informs the tone and the mood of the scene. It's just a lot that goes into that.
It's incredible how many hats you both wear in the filmmaking process. Of not only are you editing or focusing on the editorial process, you're also focusing on the creative direction of these animation scenes. You're having to be responsible for the entire vision, which is a lot. And I get the feel that you guys also lean on your team pretty well. And so I want to kind of hear about, like, what level do you micromanage things, and what level do you just entrust to the people that you brought on to handle to take the vision forward?
I think we hire incredibly talented people, and empower everybody to contribute ideas and thoughts. And like Inval said, communication is key. I think it takes all of us to make these series and, you know, make them powerful and affecting.
Well, it's really about translating Cecilia's vision to the screen. And so as the director, she will download to the team. And my job with Cecilia, as it's with other directors I work with, is how to then support that vision, help her develop that vision. Cecilia is particularly collaborative. She will ask, you know, everybody for ideas and input. But ultimately, it's about translating her vision to the screen and be the liaison between her and all the different departments. And so, yeah, I have to, and Cecilia is very well versed in all areas too, but you know, I help translate it to editorialese, you know, editing language and to musical language and to graphics language, and just kind of make sure everybody is on the same train. And it can happen on any project that you have slightly different tracks to the train. It's starting to go, not sure where it's going. And I think to say, okay, we're going to pause and explore these different paths ahead of us, but then get on this train. And, you know, with editing, it's easy to say now because it's all done and complete and the show is a hit and it's great. But as you're going, you're like, most of the time you don't know what you're doing and you don't know if the next decision is going to lead you in the right way. And, but you still have to make decisions on a daily basis because time is money and everybody's working. And like, you just have to come up with some decision. And so I think we have to trust each other's instincts. And, sometimes we'll close ourselves in a room and debate something and like just come out with a decision, with some decision to tell the team. And doesn't mean that a couple of days later we'll be like, you know, that maybe wasn't a bad decision. Let's do this other thing. But you have to just keep doing the work, because going for 2 days in the wrong direction is still part of the process. And we will know that that didn't work unless we tried it. So I think we do it with everybody. If somebody comes and say, I'm really passionate about trying this, I'll say, okay, take half a day to try this. Let's then reevaluate and come back to it. And even if that, again, if that idea gets abandoned, something of it will stay, will stick, or it will inspire another idea. And so all those sort of constantly moving pieces are part of this process. And it's never a straight line.
Inbal, can you talk me through your process of how you got to where you are today? I want listeners to be able to learn from your journey as to what like the steps you would feel are the correct or incorrect ones to take in order to get to a place where you are today.
I don't know how prescriptive I can be. And actually, I often advise my mentees or students to take a very different path than what I took. I was very lucky to fall into filmmaking in sort of intensive high school program at 15. And so that's all I've ever done in my life, never like explored other careers. So from 15, the two most influential teachers I had in this filmmaking program were documentary editors. And so I immediately sort of got inspired and gravitated towards that. I was lucky to immediately start work. I worked for the Israeli Army during my military service doing training films. Then I started working as an editor. Then I managed to get to NYU Film School and study with some of the most brilliant documentarians. I actually interned for Barbara Koppel's company, Cabin Creek, where Cecilia was working around the same time that Cecilia was there. Even though we didn't work together while there, we did cross paths there. You know, I already gravitated towards editing but I wanted to also write and be involved in producing and directing and other things that I like doing. And so I think documentaries kind of was the almost natural path. When I moved to LA in 2002, I did a ton of unscripted television. It was a boom of reality TV, and that's where I was able to find a lot of work. You mentioned The Bachelorette, but I did, you know, shows from Surf Girls to The Lazy Environmentalist to My Big Fat Obnoxious Fiancé to Trading Spouses. I mean, I did a ton of reality, and I love that work. I kept my fingers busy, my brain busy. I learned how to cut a scene 60 different ways and receive notes and work diplomatically with a lot of people in different configurations. So I think it was like a really intensive film school on how to cut TV quickly, efficiently, in the highest levels. And then always balancing that work with other work. So I would make enough money where I could take a break and take a low budget project or a narrative project and cut a narrative short and a narrative film. And so by the time I met Cecilia and worked on Brave Miss World, and we got an Emmy nomination for that film. Then I was able to leverage that to more documentary work. I worked on the Decade series for CNN for 5 seasons, and then did other films in between. And the more I've done, the luckier I am with having some privilege on being a little more selective on my project. So as you can see from my resume, whether by choice or by luck of the draw, I tend to work on heavy, dark subject matters. And so it's anything from Holocaust and genocide to police brutality and sexual assault and cults and sexism, racism. I mean, you name it. It's if it's dark, they usually call me. And so I have to find ways to diversify it a little bit when I can with other types of content, find what I can do to make sure that my career stays interesting enough for me, so that I don't get the same sort of film over and over again, if that makes sense. And now I'm teaching a little bit. I'm doing mentorships. I'm very blessed to be able to contribute different aspects.
If you had to boil it down to kind of one thing as you reflect, what would you attribute to getting where you are now and accomplishing the things that you have?
I call it butt power. I think editors need to, I don't know that I have it today as much as I did when I was younger, but I think sort of this ability to stay laser focused and in the zone. And when you edit, editors know that feeling when you're in the bay for 7 hours, but it feels like half hour has passed. And, you know, it's important to be able to really put all your heart and mind and body and soul into a project like this and make it really the best you can. And I think if it touches you and you come from a place of, you know, you're really in touch with your heart and feelings and compassion, then I think that will translate and that will, come across on the screen. And the one only thing I wanted to add is that, you know, we do the both of these cult shows, our last two cult shows that I did with Cecilia, it falls under the genre of true crime television. And, you know, for us, true crime means true crime victims, and it means to real people affected by real trauma. And we try to transcend beyond the genre and really make responsible art. We try to make television that not only aims to entertain, but to expose and educate and alert people of the dangers of these groups and sort of coercion in general. And when we see that work being out there, making an impact, that's what gets us going. That's what keeps us going.
I guess for me, it's probably coming from two parents who weren't afraid to take a stand, and maybe that has rubbed off on me. But as far as the ability to make work that resonates and makes a difference, I really think it's like we've talked about, because of the team we gather around us. And you know, first and foremost in Baal for me, but also just to mention, we have a few incredible people like our supervising producer, Morgan Poferl, who's skilled at everything from development to production to, you know, archival and post. And on Twin Flames, we had, you know, a very gender diverse team because we were dealing with the sensitive subject of the trans community and gender. And so I think it's selecting that, you know, the best team for each project. And we had, you know, on our story team, Zoe Vlock and Caitlin McLaughlin, and Jesse Parker Hart and Avery Fox, also doing research and development, our entire incredible editing team. So, you know, as we always say, small but mighty, and maybe that's one of our, you know, skills or superpowers is in bringing those people to a project who can really, who are so passionate that it will hopefully result in something that's not only, you know, entertaining, but that can make a difference.
Is there any way that listeners can keep up with you, your work, and future endeavors?
We're pretty easy to find on social media and Instagram. While we're not social media experts, we can totally, you know, send us a direct message on one of those platforms, and we're very likely to respond pretty quickly.
And they're mostly just our names, right? At Cecilia Peck.
But we have also a website that we started after the last show that's still active, seducedocumentary.com, that has resources for people exiting cults and wondering whether they're in a cult and looking for help and community, as well as bravemissworld.com, the website that we did after after that film that helps survivors of sexual assault share their stories.
And we have a smaller one for this project developed by Paula, who's in the film. And I think it's escapingtwinflamesdocumentary.com.
We're just hoping for some, you know, attention for this show from the Academy of Orders, the Television Academy of Orders. So if they would watch and consider, we have episode 3 up on the ballot.
Thank you guys so much for coming on today.
Thank you.